The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Graham, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about how Americans are more wasteful than ever. In what ways, Dave?
Well, Rob, this is an appropriate story for our post-Thanksgiving week, our celebration of the harvest and consumptions of copious quantities of turkey and other foodstuffs. The study is all about how much of the food that is available to us as American consumers do we actually eat? And the bigger question is, how much food are we wasting on a yearly basis?
How is that statistic calculated?
Well, it's not easy. Before the study, what researchers would do would be that they would conduct interviews with consumers or even conduct garbage inspections to see how much food was being wasted. But as you can probably guess, that's pretty unreliable. You're dealing with people's opinions, and garbage inspections are very regional type metrics. So for this study, the researchers said, let's take the entire number of calories available to all Americans, and this is based on all of the food that's produced and imported into the U.S., and divide that by the number of Americans. That'll give us the number of calories that's available to the average American, and then subtract out the number of calories that are actually consumed. And the researchers can figure that out by figuring out over a certain amount of time period, how much collective weight have we all gained?
And they're excluding things like exports and canned goods or stockpiles of grain, things like that?
Exactly. They're really just trying to deal with the food we have available to ourselves that we could conceivably eat on a daily basis.
So what are the figures?
Well, here's one data point from 2003. In that year, researchers found that the average American had about 3,700 calories available to them, but they only consumed about 2,300 of these calories, leaving over 1,400 calories wasted. And that comprised about waste of 39% of the food supply. And this is a trend that's actually been growing more dramatic over the years. The researchers looked at the years from 1974 to 2003. And in 1974, researchers found that Americans were only wasting about 30% of the food that was available, calculated in the same way, versus about 40% today. So that's a pretty dramatic rise over the past few decades.
Where's the extra loss happening? Restaurants, table clearing, things like that, people eating out more?
Well, the researchers say they don't have an answer for that, Rob, but according to another study, about 60% of American food waste happens at home. So what this is saying is there's a lot of food that we buy that we're just not using or we're throwing out.
Is there some underlying reason that's driving this increase in waste? Do researchers have any speculation about what that might be?
Well, the researchers say that in relative terms, food is actually pretty cheap these days and cheaper than it has been in the past. And when food is cheaper, people tend to feel like they can waste more of it. Whereas if food was very expensive, people would want to get the most for their money and potentially eat every last bean out of that can or every last piece of that Thanksgiving turkey.
Okay. So what other stories have we brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from finding out where all of America's food waste has gone to pandas finding each other in the wild, this next story is about how a female panda's call attracts a male suitor. And here's what that call sounds like. Now, that may not sound like the most charming noise to you and me, Rob, but for a male panda, that is music to their ears. Female pandas only go into heat about once a year. And when they do, they make these chirping noises. Now, they usually make these chirping noises anyways. In fact, pandas make various grunts and other types of noises in the wild to find each other. And female pandas chirp. But what the researchers found in this study is that the tone of this chirp, the way it sounds, changes when the females are most fertile. And they think that's a signal to males that says, hey, I'm ready to mate.
Is this the first time that scientists have found an animal that changes the tone of its chirping or other sounds to attract males at the time of estrus or heat?
Actually, Rob, scientists have also found that women, human women, do a very similar thing.
I must not be listening very carefully.
You're not, because according to other studies, women's voices become more high-pitched during the most fertile periods of their hormonal cycles. But what's interesting about this study is that's never been seen before in animals outside of humans. So this is the first study showing a non-human female can change the way it talks, for all intents and purposes, during its most fertile times.
I imagine this will help in conservation efforts. Pandas are endangered, aren't they?
They are, and that's an important point. The researchers say that maybe by playing these chirps for males, it might help better get them in a mood when they're trying to mate pandas in captivity.
Is it just the production of the sound, or is it the sound directed towards a particular male panda?
Well, it's possible that females have a particular male in mind. In the wild, researchers have shown that females seem to direct their chirps at a particular male while they growl to keep other males away. And so, you know, conservationists will have to take that into account to make sure that the male they're arousing is actually the male that the female wants.
Okay, so last story this week. What's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from the forest of pandas to the underwater forest of corals, this last story is about how corals and the organisms that live on them deal with the intense sunlight that they experience underwater.
I thought the water sort of acted as a filter to that sunlight.
Well, actually, Rob, living on a coral reef is a lot like living on a tanning bed. You're getting sunlight coming from above, and that's actually being magnified a lot by the ocean water. And the sunlight can potentially bounce off the coral skeletons, which can be very bright, and bounce back up onto the organisms that are living on these coral reefs. And so you're getting sort of hit from all directions, as it were. That's a lot of UV radiation, potentially. And UV is bad because it can damage tissue, it can damage DNA.
So how do the animals cope?
Well, Rob, it turns out that these coral exoskeletons, which are made of calcium carbonate, and they're made by a lot of the organisms that actually live on coral reef, not only corals themselves, but anemones and other organisms deposit these calcium carbonate structures, which make up sort of what we associate with what a coral reef looks like. It turns out, researchers knew before this study, that if you shine UV light on these coral exoskeletons, that they fluoresce, which indicates that they're absorbing this UV light and emitting it with a different wavelength. And the researchers said, if the coral skeletons are doing this, maybe they're actually absorbing a lot of these UV rays and preventing them from bouncing off of them and hitting a lot of the organisms that live on the coral. And so to test this, they took a sea anemone, which is a coral relative, and it also has a lot of organisms living on it, like coral does. And they put it both on coral exoskeletons and they put it on just white plumbing tape. And what they found is that when the organisms were put on the coral exoskeletons, they experienced 4 times less UV radiation and 7 times less DNA damage than the organisms that were put on the white plumbing tape. So this really indicated that coral does have this function. It absorbs UV light and it sort of acts as a sunscreen protecting the organisms that live on it.
So what's providing the protection? What's absorbing UV radiation and emitting something else?
Well, Rob, one theory that researchers had was it was something about the shape of the coral exoskeleton. Maybe the roughness of it was somehow bouncing these UV rays in different directions that was somehow protecting the organisms. But what they found is they actually crushed the skeleton up, so it was just this fine powder. And even when it was this powder, it had the same protective effects, indicating that there's something chemically about the coral exoskeleton that absorbs UV light and prevents it from striking some of the creatures that live on the coral.
Does this suggest that other animals that fluoresce are perhaps doing the same kind of thing? What else fluoresces under sunlight?
Well, Rob, researchers know that some scorpions and spiders also fluoresce when they're hit with UV light. So it's possible that these creatures also have found a way to protect themselves by absorbing UV light in the same way.
So researchers don't know then exactly what chemicals are at play here.
Well, Rob, the chemistry could be different in these different animals. These organisms are obviously not very highly related to each other, so it's possible that this ability, this UV protecting ability, has evolved more than once.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a story about how feeding the birds might change their evolutionary fate. And another story about how mice without fathers live longer. And for Science Insider, the Science Policy blog, we've been closely following what some are calling ClimateGate. And this is the release of thousands of private emails between high-ranking climate scientists and the impact that these emails are having on the debate about climate legislation, both in Washington and around the world. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the Science Policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.